a special brewery showcase episode of
Brutal Battle.
Yep, we're doing the brewery showcase again like we like to do. And we do like to do it, don't we?
We do.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Gives us the opportunity to delve further into one specific brewery, not just tasting a few of their beers that we haven't tried yet on the show, or maybe sometimes otherwise wouldn't try on the show, but also gives us the opportunity to look into the past, if present, and future of these breweries and see, you know, what are they about? What are they like? How they get to where they are? And why are they producing beer the way they do? And I feel like whenever we do these, it's really interesting to me because I feel immediately more interested in the beers because I'm actually learning about who's making it and how they're doing it and their involvement in the communities they're in, stuff like that. So that's one of the reasons I love these episodes so much. That and trying four beers from the same brewery is a lot of fun. But this time, we talked about doing international, and this is somewhat international. It is Evil Twin Brewing, which Gypsy Brewing is basically. It's a brewery that's actually one man behind the brand. God, I hope I don't screw this up. Jeppe Jarnit Bjergso?
I'm sure you screwed that up.
Oh, I'm sure. So my deepest apologies to the gentleman, because I'm sure I really, really messed that up. But maybe I was somewhat close. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to do something very atypical of these episodes. And
we get to drink first?
Yeah, let's get
a beer. Yes!
Let's get a beer going immediately so that while I talk, we can sip on it.
Oh, yeah.
We do have, like I said, four beers. We have two.
Ooh.
Oh, there you go. We have two that are 22-ounce, one that's 16-ounce, and one that is a 12-ounce. And I will say two of them are brewed at Westbrook Brewing in South Carolina, and two of them are brewed in Connecticut by Evil Twin. So, kind of interesting. The first one is one that's brewed at Westbrook, and what is that beer, Rebecca?
It's called Mission Goza. It's a Goza style with eucalyptus added, and it's 4%.
Yeah, very low, typical for Gozas. And it's got on the label like a suit with a bow tie and a little flower on the lapel. It looks very James Bond-esque.
Yeah, well, it's funny because on the label it says, perhaps you'll enjoy this beer in a restaurant with a mission near you. I don't know.
No, I don't know. Anyway, since it's poured, like the first thing I noticed when you poured it, the bubbles in this are huge. Like, these are giant bubbles in there that you would see, like, in a soda.
It says it will probably be the most refreshing beer you'll ever have.
Well, we'll put that to the test. But, I mean, typically in the past when I've had Evil Twin beers, I've enjoyed them all. I don't think I've had one that I've been like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, you're right. It is very large bubbles.
Yeah, bubbles are huge, like soda. You know, typically you're getting much more fine carbonation,
uh-huh.
And this is like a lot larger. It's kind of odd. Just not used to seeing that. It's very yellow, see-through, a little bit of a orangish tinge in there. Let me see what I smell.
Salt.
Oh, it smells very salty, very sour. You get that kind of like a little bit of a funkiness that you typically get with Gozas.
Like, the smell makes my mouth water.
Yes, it does to me as well. And there's a, you know, that kind of weedy note.
I only get that from a couple things. I got it now, and I get it whenever I think of banana peppers.
Mm. Well, ooh, okay.
Oh, you already went to...
I'm sorry. I figured we covered all of what was in the scent.
I feel like we take a long time on the scent.
I'm going to let you take... I'm letting you take the helm on the flavor, so go ahead and tell me what you get. Really sour, isn't it? A lot more sour than you might think. Hmm. So what do you think? What are you getting out of that?
I'm getting a lot of, like, citrus fruit.
Yes. It's very lemony to me. It's got that weedy backbone to it, and it's very salty as well. But I think the lemon and the salt kind of balance each other. One is not dominating the other, and I think it's kind of a situation where the lemon hits you up front, the salt comes in the end. So it's, you know.
I'm getting definitely some lime in here, though. Like, I feel like it kind of reminds me a little bit of a margarita.
Okay. Yeah, no, I could see that. And I think people typically make that connection a lot of the times because, you know, intense citrus like lemon or lime plus saltiness is always going to, you know, remind people of margaritas. So
I like this. I don't really know what a eucalyptus tastes like.
I don't I'm not either.
Sure. I'm assuming maybe. I really don't even know.
Yeah, so I think that for that reason, we probably can't say that we're tasting it necessarily because we don't know what to look for.
Is that like the lime aspects? I have no idea. I don't know what
I mean, maybe it's playing with the flavor profile and giving it a lime aspect. That's possible.
I don't know.
Because eucalyptus is a plant,
mm-hmm.
so giving it a little more of a vegetal aspect to it may do that. I don't know.
I like this.
But it's interesting because this is one of the ones that's brewed at Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically contract brewed for Evil Twin.
They do a really good Goza.
Right, exactly. And I just feel like this tastes very similar to the Westbrook Goza for that reason.
You think so?
I do. I really do.
I really don't remember what it tastes like. I haven't really met a Goza I haven't liked.
See, the other one, the Westbrook Goza, I think is a little more intense with the sourness. So this is a little bit dialed back on that, which I like. And I also think it's got a little bit more of the wheat aspect coming through than the regular Westbrook Goza. So, but interesting. So you can continue to sip on that. And I mean, we both will.
When it's 4% like this, it really goes down like water. Like I'm already done.
Well, you don't have to fight with like a really heavy body. You don't have to fight with a lot of alcohol to choke down. The only thing that might hold you up on this is the salt and also the sourness because it can just give you a lot of phlegm.
See, I don't
which happens with me.
I don't think this is sour.
It is.
I know, pretty, I know, but
which is why it's so weird to me because there are beers that are less sour than this that you say you don't like because they're so sour. And I think part of that is for you. I think the salt balances things a little more.
Yeah, I love the salt.
Mm.
Okay,
that's so a good what do we beer. Got? I like this beer. Great one to start with. So, Yippee. He started out with his first experience with beer was when he had a sip of beer at the age of 2.
He remembers that? Or that someone just told him the story?
No. He said, I don't know how, he said that in an interview that I read online. I could have listened to it, but the transcript was there, so I just read it. But that's what he said, and he was brought up in Denmark. I think he was brought up in Copenhagen, I'm not 100% sure, but he worked and operated in Copenhagen for a while. So he's a Danish individual. He started really getting into like actually brewing beer in 2005 because he really wasn't happy with what was going on around him. You know, his market in where he was in Copenhagen, Denmark, the majority of the beers they had available were much like Carling, which I don't know if you've heard of that. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of like a little bit like a macro kind of beer, but it's typically what people in England and the surrounding area drink. Very well known. So he wasn't happy with that. So he's like, I'm gonna start brewing my own beers here. So, but prior to that, do you know what he was doing for a job? He was a school teacher for kids with disabilities.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he made a very big change in career.
I like you asked me that question like I was going to have an answer.
Well, I wanted to see what you might throw out there. You know, maybe you had something interesting. I'd be like, trapeze artist or, you know, whatever. You know, he's in the military, whatever, you know. So, but that's just a...
Instead, I just looked at you.
Yeah, you did, but that's fine. I'm good with that. So he actually, when he started brewing in 2005, he was also brewing alongside his brother, Mikkel Borg Bjergso. It's so hard to say these names. Yeah. I'm sorry. It really is. I have an easier time with German names. And Mikkeller actually started his brand, Mikkeller in 2006. So it was 1 year after.
1 year after.
After Yeppe started really, you know, getting serious about brewing. So he...
And that is the Mikkeller that we know today.
Yes, that is the Mikkeller. And they're identical twins, by the way.
Oh.
So that's why Evil Twin is called Evil Twin.
Oh.
Considers himself...
Who's the Evil Twin?
him. That's what he's saying. Yeppe is saying that he's the evil twin. He thought that it was kind of fun to play on the rivalry between twins and the tension there, but he also was just like, Evil Twin's just a cool name too.
So that's fun.
It works in a few different ways. So he actually ended up starting like commercial brewing in 2010. So he started 4 years basically after his brother. So he took cues from his brother. And when he started brewing, he sold his beer fast and he gained tons of notoriety. Everything he brewed was gone super, super quick. And he got a lot of notoriety specifically in New York for some reason. Hmm. New York was like specifically keying into what he was doing. And his philosophy throughout everything was basically like, look, I'm not focusing on what's popular right now necessarily or what crazy stuff can I do, but what's the end product? What am I trying to get to? What's going to make this beer really taste good? Not to say that he hasn't experimented from time to time with doing more crazy things just to see what it would do, because he has. In fact, I was reading about how he did a donut biscotti break. He has like an imperial biscotti break beer.
Very good.
A really good imperial stout. And he did like a donut version where literally there are donuts in the beer. And I think it was for every 60 barrels of that beer, there are 1,000 actual donuts in the beer.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
So what were the first types of beers he brewed?
I don't know.
Oh.
See, here's the thing about this. It is hard to find information about him and Evil Twin. And I think that's kind of intentional. I think he's just kind of like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You know, he's done some interviews, so that's how I got the information I got mainly. Because I had to go through and read interviews with him.
This is kind of, it reminds me a little bit of Stillwater with Brian Strumke.
Yeah, they're both gypsy brewers. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. They seem to have kind of this similar philosophy.
Yes, they do. And they know each other, I believe. So yeah, so you just focus on end product a lot. So I will talk a little bit more about Yeppe and Evil Twin, but I think we need to move to another beer.
Oh gosh, I poured myself more Goza.
This is really good. When I keep sipping on it, it's the sourness mellows out even more because your palate just gets used to it, and that saltiness as well. And it's really like a nice sippable Goza.
I feel like it just kind of coats your mouth in salt. I love it.
It does, but it's also coating your mouth with a nice, nice sour kick.
Yeah.
At the same time, like that's a well-crafted beer. So good job on Yeppe coming up with a good recipe, and for Westbrook for executing it very well. Which is one of the big reasons that Yeppe does a lot of his contract brewing with Westbrook, because he really trusts them. You know, he had tasted first a lot of their beers and was like, wow, these people are really on point with how they're making their beers and what they're making. I'd love for them to handle my stuff. So let's pour that. What do we have going on for this next one?
What do we have here? Mosaic Single Hop Imperial IPA. Wait, no.
Hold on. It's a long name.
Slash that. Mosaic Single Hop Imperial India Pale American Wheat Lager.
Yeah, it's a lot to say, and it's a little confusing. You need to kind of like pick each portion apart when you're talking about it. So obviously it's a single hop. It says it's Mosaic. Mosaic is a great hop, by the way. So I'm excited about this one. I'm excited about all these beers, to be honest. But
and it's 8%.
And it's so Imperial India Pale American Wheat Lager. So it's a wheat lager, and it's like an IPA hop. You know, like that level of hopping to it with Mosaic. It is confusing to just like read it once and be like, wait, what style is this? What happened?
Yeah, I'm still confused. Let's see how it tastes.
There's a lot of like alfalfa.
Ow.
It smells like alfalfa to me.
It smells very syrupy and piney to me.
Like, okay, like you know when you're at a pet store and you go to like the gerbil and chinchilla and hamster food, this is what it smells like. There's a lot of alfalfa in that, and that's the overwhelming thing that I smell is alfalfa.
Okay.
It's really interesting. Very grainy.
I just get like the syrupy.
It does smell syrupy.
Pine.
There's a lot of pine to it. Yes, there is that as well.
This is not the type of nose I like.
I do smell a little bit of that wheat aspect, and there's a little bit of a crisp nose on the end that is consistent with a lager smell. This is interesting. Okay. I don't know what I was expecting. I'm not a big fan.
Tastes like hay.
Yeah, that alfalfa aspect. I get a lot of that.
That's what it tastes like.
A lot of that alfalfa. A lot of, you know, like you're saying, it's very piney. And then I get that wheat coming up on the end. There is a very typical crisp kind of lager finish to it. But overall, I think the imperial aspect of this takes a lot of the crispness away that could otherwise be there.
It tastes like I just went up to a barrel of hay and just started like...
Yeah, I mean, it's very hay-like. And there's no, like, bottle date on this or anything. So I don't know if the mosaic has died down because this beer's on the older side. I don't know.
I could see why people would like this beer. As soon as I... Maybe this is just... I should have went into it with an open mind. But, like, as soon as I smell that syrupy quality, I am turned off.
And I was just about to say... As I keep sipping it, it does taste quite syrupy.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of like sweet syrupiness in the body's a little bit so that it like really coats your mouth. Yeah. I could see people liking this.
Some people like that.
I really wanted that mosaic to shine in this beer.
I mean, what is nice is like there's not one characteristic that's not like overpowering, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what you smell is what you get.
I think the hay alfalfa aspect is overpowering.
Well, but, I mean, it doesn't leave a bad aftertaste. It's not real bitter. Those are the things I really don't like.
Okay. Well, I can see that.
Moving on.
So, Jeppe, you know, he started everything out when he was in Denmark. And then he actually moved, I think in 2012, he moved to Brooklyn, New York. He just kind of decided, hey, you know, this craft beer scene's really doing a lot of fun stuff in the United States. I think I want to get involved in that and be right there for it. So he moved to Brooklyn.
Is that where he lives now?
Yes.
Okay.
So it really, it was really good because obviously, you know, I was reading before, that's where he ended up getting a lot of hype in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of fits that he would go and live there. So,
well, that's probably why he picked it.
It could be. I don't know. But at least 100 days out of the year, he's going around to other breweries for either brewing there himself or setting up the recipes or doing collaborations for contract brewing. So he's you know, he lives in Brooklyn, but he's all over the place. And I think he still goes back to Denmark, too, because I think he still owns something there. It was said that he owns the Old Butikin, a bottle shop in Copenhagen, and he also owns a beer bar in Brooklyn called Torst, which has a restaurant in the back of it called Luxus, which is a beer pairing restaurant, which sounds like I want to go to.
Now, does his brother still live in Denmark?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Oh.
Maybe if we do a Mikkeller show, I will find that out. I'm not sure. I did find an article that was saying that he mainly brews at Cerveza del Montseny in Spain, Amager Brewhouse in Denmark, Two Roads Brewing in Connecticut, which is where our last two beers of the show are from, and Westbrook Brewing in South Carolina, which the two that we just had, that's where they were done. So that's where he spends most of his time. But he goes to many other breweries, and... In one of the interviews I found with him, they were asking, you know, like, do you just go to a brewery and be like, oh, this is a nice-looking brewery, I work here? And he's kind of like, no. He's like, you know, he kind of looks at their product and what he thinks they would be able to do. They really have to be people he trusts to execute his recipes the way he wants them executed. And his prime example of people, of, you know, someone who he, like, greatly, greatly trusts with that is Westbrook. A guy named Ed, who's at Westbrook. I think he's one of the owners, or brewmaster, I would say. So, he brewed close to 12,000 barrels of beer in 2014. So last year, well, this is, when this is coming out, it's 2016, so, you know. 2 years.
Okay, can I open the next one?
Well, it's basically still a year, though. Yeah, let's go ahead and move to the next one. I will say real quick, oh, it is a can. Real quick, I looked on Beer Advocate, and he had 193 different beers on Beer Advocate, which that's a lot of ground to cover with different beers, especially considering he's only been in production since 2010. So pretty much six full years. And then that really roughly boils down to 32 distinct beers per year, which I feel like is a lot, in my opinion, to come up with that many different beers. I mean, some of these are in collaboration with other breweries, but still, that's a lot of work. Okay. So, what do we have for our third beer?
We have the Molotov Light.
Molotov Light. And this is a, I believe, a different version of their Molotov cocktail, or his Molotov cocktail beer.
It's an Imperial IPA.
Alcohol right there is 8.5.
And I think it's funny because it has how many calories on the can?
Oh, does it?
250 calories.
Oh, that's funny.
There's 2 grams of protein.
Oh, that's good. Probably from yeast.
No fat. 22 grams of carbs. That's funny.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, yippee. Thanks so much for giving us the nutritional facts. That is
very important, though, for people who...
People do want to know. People really do.
I'm doing, like, my fitness pal and...
I typically really don't want to know because...
Well, sometimes I don't want to know.
You know what I mean. All right, so what do you smell?
Okay, so this is way more on my alley.
Yeah.
The citrus.
I do get a lot of pine on it, but I also get a lot of citrus coming through.
I get more citrus.
This one also smells kind of syrupy.
I definitely get some pine, some syrupy.
A little resinous in there.
But I definitely get a lot of the...
Ooh, yeah. So what kind of, like, citrus do you get on it? I get a little bit of, like, a...
I went to drinking.
Mine's like a sweet citrus. It's not like straight up citrus. It's like citrus candy. Like maybe like some candied, because there is a little bit of a bitterness. Yes, there is some pineapple on it, but I'd also say mixed in there maybe like some candied citrus rind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like this. Smells really good.
It's very sweet.
Oh, wow.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's like crazy sweet. Mm. I don't think I was expecting that.
It's really sweet, and it kind of finishes a little bitter, which I don't like, but I do like the beer overall.
I will say this, though. For being an Imperial and being 8.5%, I thought it would finish significantly more bitter.
Yeah.
So it's less than I expected. I think that the flavors in it mirror the nose.
Yeah.
Very well. Yeah. I think the pineapple's not as pronounced as what I can smell. But it's there. You can perceive it. And the sweetness that I was smelling is a little more amped up. It's kind of sugary almost.
Mm-hmm. I like this.
Mm-hmm. Mike at Wine World had told me that he was a fan of this one.
Oh, yeah. I think.
You get a lot of pine. There's plenty of pine in this. And I really do get that kind of like sweet citrus rind, you know, candied citrus rind aspect to it. Mm. It's a pretty solid beer. Okay, so the last portion... actually, I wanted to say one more thing. One of the reasons I couldn't get a whole lot of information on Evil Twin is his website's not all that helpful as far as his about section. But that's fine because it's, you know, it just made me do some research. But he's got some interesting stuff on there. So under the about section, he says, we have all good intentions to disturb, disorder, and enlighten you with unforgettable beer after beer. Because we are so much in love with good taste, all the beers from Evil Twin are prepared in 10 of the best breweries around the world, exclusively handpicked to please you with delicate, funky, extreme, and by all means, rare flavors. Hmm. Maybe not the easiest way, but certainly the most fun. One more thing. A clever man once said, stay thirsty, stay foolish. That sounds like our vision, just with a tad less attitude.
That's funny.
So that was pretty cool. And the last thing I really wanted to touch, and then we'll open the last beer and try that and see what's working. I found an article by Yeppe himself through Thrillist. just Thrillist.com. And this was a really cool article, because what it was basically him talking about all the, how he came up with certain beer names, of which he's had many, because like I said, there were like 193 beer credits for him on Beer Advocate. So he just kind of like broke down a few of them. He chose some and was just like, oh, this is how it is. The majority of them were like accidental naming. It was kind of like a conversation with someone happened, and then they were like, oh, we should name the beer that. So I marked down a few that I want to read over because I thought they're really interesting. The first one is Wet Dream. So he said, this is a collaboration I made the first time with Aaron, who owns the Trappist in San Francisco. He had the idea to make a brown ale with coffee and explained in an email how it would taste because of the rosiness playing with the coffee, and said, doesn't that sound like a wet dream? So we called it, so we called it Wet Dream. I didn't think it would be approved by the government, but they did it. If they knew it had something to do with something sexual, they probably wouldn't have approved it, but those dudes probably didn't get it.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
So I thought, yeah, I thought that one was pretty friggin' smart and funny. All right, the next one that I wanted to talk about is Even More Jesus. So I'll read this one. He said, that's probably the most infamous one, Even More Jesus. Even More Jesus actually came from a lost in translation thing with me being from Denmark. I was discussing something about prices with a business partner, and we were sending emails back and forth, and one of the prices was really high, and I wrote, Jesus, this is expensive. And then I did another one, and it was even more expensive, and wrote, even more Jesus. And his reply was, I don't care how expensive it is, the next beer you make has to be called Even More Jesus. A lot of people think it has something to do with being Christian, which I am totally not. It's very catchy, but it doesn't make sense.
Even More Jesus.
So you see, this is another instance of like, oh, it just came up in a conversation. The next one I want to cover was Hipster Ale. First time I made it, it was called Isted God Hipster Ale, since it was made from my shop in Denmark on Isted God Street, which was pretty much the most hip street in Copenhagen. I kind of wanted to make fun of the whole hipster thing, and it was my idea of getting hipsters to drink better beer other than Pabst Blue Ribbon. So I decided to call it Hipster Beer as a joke. I wasn't sure if hipsters would find it too ironic, too self-reflexive, so they wouldn't drink it, but I didn't give a shit. If it worked, it worked, and if it didn't, it didn't. But it worked. We sell a shitload of that stuff. I have no idea if hipsters drink it, though. So there's that. Molotov Cocktail is the other one, which, you know, we had the Molotov Light, which was kind of a version of the Molotov Cocktail. Molotov Cocktail. I've always had this love for very alcoholic, very hoppy IPAs. I've always loved the combination of lots of alcohol and lots of bitterness. They just work so well together. So I made the beer and knew it was going way over the top. It's 13%. It's crazy hoppy. It's going to be way too hoppy. And a Molotov cocktail is fucking explosive in so many ways and so unbalanced, and it's just a cool name. And when you drink it, if you don't like it, you kind of can't complain about the taste. You just bought a fucking beer called Molotov Cocktail. I thought that's pretty funny. And then the last one I wanted to go over, and that concludes the information about Evil Twin, is the last beer we're going to be trying. I actually have, you know, he did a write-up on the name for that. And it is called Christmas Eve at a New York City Hotel Room. He said, Christmas beers are also big in Denmark, which I always found stupid. What is a Christmas beer? In Denmark, everyone thinks it's a spiced dark Belgian ale. When I had my bottle shop, I guess he doesn't have it anymore. When I had my bottle shop, I got so annoyed because even in October, people are coming in like, do you have any Christmas beers? So I decided I would never make a Christmas beer. But then I changed my mind and made a stout that has nothing to do with Christmas, just to make fun of it. I actually spent Christmas Eve in a New York hotel room before I moved here, and we ate, well, Brooklyn that is, and we ate Thai food, so not a very traditional Christmas. And it was just a cool name to use because it had a story about me not really being into the whole Christmas thing. So that is why you have...
Christmas Eve at a New York City hotel room.
Correct. So break it down. Is this an Imperial Stout, I believe?
Yeah. Ooh, that was tough to open. Yes, it's an Imperial Stout. It's 10%.
Got to rinse your glass.
That's all I got.
Imperial Stout, 10%. I like it. I'm with you on this, Yeppe, because I personally hate the Christmas-style beers, all the spicing that goes into it. It's usually over the top. Plus, I love stouts. I love Imperial Stouts in particular.
I poured with a nice little head.
Did you say 10%?
Yeah. Didn't we have one Christmas beer last Thanksgiving with my family from...
Great Lakes.
Yes.
That was not bad. Yeah, that's true.
That was actually very
good. But here's the thing. They're seldom... I'm seldom into the Christmas beers.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to get into those, so...
Okay, I'm not really getting a lot...
Super dark, nice tan brown head to it.
Okay.
Ooh.
For some reason, the first thing that came to my mind was chalk. I guess maybe it's like... I feel like it smells maybe dry...
It does, okay, I can see what you're saying. I perceive a little bit of alcohol in the nose. I do get some, like, dark chocolate notes in the nose, but that's after sniffing it quite a bit. I get dried cherry on the nose, to be honest.
Just nondescript.
There's, like, dark fruits. Smells a little bit hoppy. There's a significant hop presence for an Imperial Stout.
Well, you definitely get the alcohol in the taste.
I can imagine. Yeah, I can't get anything else in the nose.
I love stouts, especially this time of year. This is just okay.
It's got a bit of an ashy finish to it. A little ashy, little bit of a leather type finish on there.
Kind of bitter.
A little bitter. I get some dark chocolate to it. I get more of a hop characteristic than you typically get with Imperial Stouts.
Yep, I was going to say, rarely do you get a stout this hoppy. Not that it's super hoppy, but relatively speaking.
I don't really think it tastes like 10%, though. I think it's more like in line with like a 9.
I think it's a 10.
I see, you know, that nose you were saying getting a little bit of a chalkiness. I'm getting that in the taste. It is a little chalky, dry.
Yeah.
I like it, though.
Okay.
I like that dry, chalky, it's like chocolate. Dark chocolate chalk. You know what I mean? Like a dry dark chocolate. Like if you're just, maybe just chewing nibs, but not as much flavor, but you get that kind of chalky dryness from chewing nibs.
I mean, it's not bad. I don't know.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty solid beer. Yeah, well, this episode didn't go super long, partially because I couldn't find like a crap ton of information about Yeppe and Evil Twin Brewing, but part of that's because it's relatively new, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, relatively new, but the craft beer scene's been exploding for some years, so some people probably look at Evil Twin and are like, wow, Evil Twin's been around for quite a while. So it was interesting because when we picked these beers out, Rebecca was like, okay, so Evil Twin is from Denmark, and he's, like, international. He's a gypsy brewer. So why are his beers in the domestic section? They were in, like, the domestic craft beer section. And I think it's probably because he's doing the majority of his brewing in the United States. Yeah. So, you know, that would be it.
Okay, so we rank them now?
Yes. Favorite to least.
So I'm gonna have to go. Favorite is the Goza.
Mm-hmm. Then, which is the Mission Goza.
The Mission Goza. Then the Molotov Molotov Light.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Mosaic yada 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 Wheat Lager.
Okay. My favorite is the Mission Goza as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Christmas Eve in a New York City hotel room is my second favorite, to be honest. Then the Molotov Light. And then I'll say the whole thing. The Mosaic Single Hop Imperial India Pale American Wheat Lager.
Okay.
Just not feeling that one, really. And the reason I gave the nod to the stout over the Molotov Light is because the extra sweetness that I was getting in the Molotov Light was turning me off.
Turned you off a little.
Turned me off a little bit. It's still a good beer. I still drink it. It tasty. But that just made me like the stout
a bit more. It makes sense.
But I wouldn't say any of these are bad beers. It's just we didn't prefer some of them.
Yeah, I agree.
But this was fun. So this was our pseudo-international episode.
Kinda, sorta.
It was hard because we were looking at what international ones we could do, and the issue is I want to get 4 beers for each one so we have a good, you know, a good amount of beers to go through. I feel like 4 is a good number. But a lot of them, we just can't find 4.
Well, we only looked in one store.
That's true. We'll have to try. We'll try a little bit harder next time. And then some of the other ones I came up with, like the ideas, like let's do Rodenbach, but the overwhelming majority of what Rodenbach we can get, actually the only Rodenbach we can get around us, are in like 750 milliliter bottles, and we're not going to sit here and open 4 of those for just us because we wouldn't be able to do it.
No.
But I guess we could do something like that at some point, but just have some, like, the neighbors on call to say, okay, we're done with the episode. Come help us with the beers, which I'm sure they'd be all right with. So, anyway, was this fun?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you feel closer to Evil Twin now? A little bit?
I guess.
You know the stories behind the names of some of these beers.
Yeah.
It makes you want to try them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, after reading about everything, what I really want to try now is that donut beer.
I thought we had it before.
No.
The donut break?
No, we did not have the donut break. We've had the Imperial Biscotti Break regular, and then we had the Imperial Biscotti Break Natal, which is Imperial Biscotti Break with sour cherry, which is a nice beer.
Maybe I'm thinking about that.
Both of those are good beers. I like them all quite a bit. So, anyway, successful episode. Thank you, Rebecca, for being here and helping me pick out the brewery. It was ultimately your suggestion. Yeah. So Evil Twin came from your mind.
Because we spent way too much time wandering up and down the aisles. And I was like, that's it. We're just doing this one.
Yeah, we did. We spent a lot of time. We were like, what about this brewery? What about this brewery?
Making a decision. We're sticking with it. It was a good decision.
No, yeah, definitely. So, Yepe, thanks for your commitment to the craft beer community and the beer.
I'm sorry if we've been mispronouncing your name this whole episode.
Yeah, you know, real sorry. And Westbrook Brewing, in particular, thank you for your role in making that Mission Goza, because that's really good.
Yeah.
Really good. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening. If there's a brewery you want showcased at some point, go ahead and send us an email, brutalbattlepodcast@gmail.com, and we will see what we can do. But until next time, please remember to
keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.